Current Geek would like to thank Netgear for sponsoring this podcast. Check out Orbi Wi-Fi 6 at your local Best Buy or netgear.com/bestwifi. That's netgear.com/bestwifi.
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, episode 247. For Tuesday, January 28th, 2019. Nope, 2020. That's the year. I'm Scott Johnson, and welcome to Current Geek, the talk show about items of interest to the geeks of the world and you. Joining me, Mr. Tom Merritt.
Welcome to Current Geek.
Look at you with the gavel at the end like we talked about. That's perfect.
I know. I'm liking it. I'm liking it. Feels good.
All this time
It feels good to be back for a talk episode. Talk show, if you will. I just coined that term. What do you think?
A talk episode.
Talk show.
Has anyone called them that before? Talk shows? Is that a
talk show?
Huh.
That's what I'm going to call them.
Yeah. Talk radio in a way. Ooh, wow. Another.
I like it. I like it. Even better.
Yeah.
We're coining all kinds of brand new phrases that no one has ever used before.
Nobody except Herbert Hoover, I guess. But we'll get to that in a second. Anyway, it's good to be back, everybody. Welcome to the show. We got lots to talk about. I just want to say at the top of this episode, how much I adored the first episode of Picard. I was telling Tom pre-show how much I liked it. I've seen it twice now, and I'm just happy to have a good captain-style protagonist back in my life.
Oh, me too, man. Like, it was good Patrick Stewart, good Picard, good Star Trek, fun new stuff. I know some people didn't like it because it's got new stuff, but that doesn't bother me, so yeah. I loved every second of it.
And they didn't even trash one of my favorite Star Trek movies, and I know it's not the popular opinion, but I like Nemesis, and yet they still preserved the lore and impact that Nemesis had. And if
you
anything,
the data. Lore was already gone.
Oh, I see you did. I see you did there. And there's a lot to read into that if you haven't seen it. But watch that show. It's great. Now this.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering. As do many others in high public office.
Infant radio. Tom Merritt, what happened last time we spoke?
Yeah. I don't think the term infant radio is going to catch on. mostly because advertisers don't want to target infants.
That's true.
The U.S. Space Force, however, has caught on. It's a branch of the U.S. Air Force dedicated to military operations in space. If you're like, wait, don't we have military in space? Current space operations are overseen by NASA. And they very frequently borrow people from the Air Force, but the Space Force is overseen by the military itself. The logo that was unveiled for the U.S. Space Force included the arrowhead design from the U.S. Air Force Space Command logo, which does actually look a lot like the arrowhead design of the Federation from Star Trek. Air Force Space Command was created as Space Command in 1982 and was redesignated as U.S. Space Force on December 20th. So really, they just took an existing logo and ported it over to look a little niftier. The arrowhead was there the whole time, but everybody freaked out.
Yeah, that arrowhead, or the Delta symbol, as it's sometimes called, is in a lot of military imagery, badges
That's
and things like
where
that.
Where the Federation... Got it.
Yeah, technically, you could probably actually argue that.
I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not.
We don't know. But what's his name? Went maybe to NASA and got a little inspiration.
Originally, that Federation symbol was merely the symbol of the Enterprise.
Oh yeah, that's true.
If you remember, in some of those original series, they would go meet members of other ships, and they would have different insignia. They wouldn't have the little arrowhead.
That's true. I forgot about that. They totally did. But it became kind of the thing. I'm of two minds of this. One, my graphic design brain can't get around, at least not acknowledging the fact that these are very similar designs.
Sure.
But there's another piece of me that really likes, and some took that, by the way, as a weird political stance. I don't have one here, really.
Stay in your lane, Johnson.
I think that they're very similar. And then there's the nerd part of me that's totally cool with that. Like, it's actually a leaning into a potential future that I actually really like, that's hopefully a little less military focused and more exploration focused, and who knows what space looks like in 100 years, but it's fine. It just is very similar, so don't expect people not to notice is what I would say. If you're those designers or whoever was sort of charged with this, I think you probably got some of your inspiration. And if it were me, I'd come out and say, you know, not unlike the fictional Star Trek universe, we're trying to create some optimism with our cool new logo and maybe own it.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing about this to me. If you have an opinion about this, you're being political. It's a rebranding.
Yeah.
It's taking the U.S. Air Force Space Command and changing the name to Space Force with the idea that someday it might become its own branch, the way the Air Force used to be a part of the Army mm-hmm. and eventually became its own branch. Some people are calling it a branch already, but it's still supervised by the Air Force. So it's kind of where the Air Force was. I may get my history wrong here, but after it was first formed, it was considered the Air Force, but it was part of the Army. And then it was, you know, formally made its own branch. And I don't remember exactly when. So I'm going to try not to get myself in trouble there. But
sure.
But that's where Space Force is now. They're like, oh, it's not just a command. It's been elevated a little bit. But really, it's just saying, hey, the militaries of other countries are starting to operate in space. We have satellites that operate in space. There might be some military concerns in space. So the people who are concerned with that in the military are going to be these people, and we're going to call them that.
Yeah, I would have called it something else just because I think Space Force sounds silly and like pulpy science fiction-y kind of way.
Space Force!
I've had that problem since the announcement, but it's fine. It just seems a little on the nose. It's like a thing you'd need to join in the last Starfighter 2 or something.
Well, it's like Air Force, Space Force.
Right. And it makes sense,
right?
And then
someday we'll have Ocean Force. We have that. It's the Navy.
No. Oh, right. That's the Navy. Yeah, we don't need that. And the Air Force. We already have the Air Force. Water Force. So, yeah, like, it's fine. I just would have preferred something closer to the, you know, Starfleet's a cool name.
I think, actually, you're right. We need to just rechristen all of it to Water Force, Dirt Force for the Army.
Yep.
I don't know what you do about the Marines. Like, Water to Dirt Force Multi-Terrain Force?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you could probably still call them, you know what, the Marine Corps can stay. Leave that. That's good.
Yeah. You know what? That's a good call. We don't want to mess with the Marines.
You know, well, that's one thing. But also, I think it still sounds cool. But yeah, if we're going to go Space Force, let's do whatever force. And now everything has to be whatever element. Like, if we end up with so many fires in this world because of, I don't know, changing climate or something, and it's so bad that we have to create a fire force, call them the Fire Force. There you go.
Yeah.
The new military branch of firefighters.
All right. Let's talk about some actual prototype, hot cutting edge technology. The startup Mojo Vision was showing off their smart contact lens to Dean Takahashi from VentureBeat. Right now, it can deliver a green monochrome micro LED display on a hard scleral lens. So these are hard contacts, not soft contacts. The demo showed simple green words and numbers hovering above real world things. And the prototype requires an external battery and processor to run, which seems like, you know, running wires in your eyes probably isn't the way they want it to work out eventually when they make it real. So Mojo Vision says any production version would probably require a separate accessory for a data connection and processor, but they want to make it wireless. Mm. Also, the contact would need to be sanitized nightly, charged by induction, and be controlled by eye tracking. Mojo Vision is conducting feasibility clinical studies under an institutional review board approval. It's also working with the US FDA's Breakthrough Device Program for medical devices, which kind of speeds things along. It's in the research and development stage, but Mojo Vision hopes to have a product to market in 2 years. Well, that happens. But kind of cool, the idea of like, hey, not wearing any goofy glasses on your face. You just have augmented reality in your contact lens.
Yeah. I mean, to me, this seems like the natural step where we, you know, why not? Obviously, there's a long ways to go. This always sounds like when these initial plans come out for things like this, you always can see past the like ninth iteration when things finally make sense. But they got to start somewhere. So make it hard, make it sort of not wireless at first so you can test things out and then figure out a way to make that happen. Like, there's a lot to solve there, but I'm all about heads-up displays and much smaller things than glasses or head devices or whatever. Let's put it in my eye. Let's do it.
And if I can try to catch most of the reactions people have to this is, oh, it's a bunch of hype. No, it's actually got FDA, you know, acceptance. So they had to have something real. It's over promising. I don't know. Maybe it's a working prototype. They may never get it working properly. This may not be the company that gets it working. Maybe some other company that comes along and popularizes. It's too early. Yes, it is. That doesn't make it any less cool. This is the kind of thing you see a few years before something becomes real. We saw tons of tablets, right? Before mm-hmm. Apple came along and made the iPad. And then all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, that's how it should work. Mm-hmm. So, this may or may not be the company that brings it, but I like looking at the stuff in this stage and going, oh, okay, so this is real. And it looks likely that this company or someone will be able to make it workable.
Yeah. Like I said, start someplace. You can't just suddenly have them. So get going, then we'll iterate and people can complain all they want until it's a thing. I remember when phones were like that. I remember when virtual keyboards were like that. I'm old enough to remember a whole lot of things that were like that. So it's one that
you'll never be able to run two programs at once. Yeah, look at all these windowing programs. All of them are crap.
That's crazy.
Windowing programs will never take off, Scott. That's how we talked in the 80s.
Yeah, in the 80s, working up to, the first version of Windows landed and we went, oh, this isn't going to work. Or no, you're never going to have you're never going to have multiple windows.
One of my favorite artifacts I have is an old PC computing magazine that compares all the various windowing programs, including one from Microsoft called Windows. And they kind of bag on the name being unimaginative. And it is not given any more credence than the other ones they talk about. In fact, it isn't even their favorite. It's somewhere in the middle of the pack, which I find hilarious.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we got past that. We'll get past heavy, obnoxious things in our eyes. It'll be fine.
But yeah, back to the contacts. I think this is the ultimate, this is the end goal for a lot of people will be like, I don't wear contact lenses. I prefer to just pop glasses on and off my face because I need them more and more often over time, but I don't need them all the time.
Yeah.
At some point, maybe I'll be like, you know what? Augmented reality. That's great. Here's what's even more likely, Scott, is that contact lenses get disrupted and we find a better way to do this altogether where you don't even need a physical device. You're just projecting something into your eye.
Well, often that is what happens, right? Like, well, we think we know what the path's going to be and then some innovation comes out of nowhere and we're like, oh, wait, we can accomplish this with that and we'll skip the whole having to have your eye in their thing altogether. What if it was just some kind of, I don't know, brain waves that we replicate and figure out a way to talk to your brain.
Right.
So you just see what you want to see when you want to see it, but it's all an external device causing it. And that's way less invasive, you know, it's even better than contacts. You don't have to jam anything in your eye.
Like video calls.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite examples of this. All the world of the future will have a video phone and you'll sit down at a desk and you'll turn on your video phone and you'll pick up a handset to talk on, but you'll see the other person on the video. That never happened.
Nope.
We totally have video phones now. They're called smartphones.
Right. And but, not only that,
not happen the way anybody predicted.
No, we have all these ways to do it, but the ways they envision didn't happen. The ways people envisioned massive amounts of information being accessible by everyone does not look like what the internet turned into. But conceptually, it was there. And that's the great thing about human imagination and eventual innovation is we start kind of, you know, busted and then we figure out a way around it. I think we'll get there. And I don't think it has to be a piece of plastic in your eye.
Now, the other side of that is the fact that some of these things that we think are fairly modern are really old. For instance, scientists have determined that tin ingots in Israel, so like, you know, little blocks of tin that were probably used by people to melt down and make bronze out of, date back 3,000 years and come from Cornwall and Devon in modern day Britain. Whoa. And if your geography is a little shaky, Cornwall is very far from Israel. Especially for someone in the Bronze Age, probably was a boat that would have delivered these tin ingots. Researchers used lead and tin isotope data, as well as trace element analysis, to identify where the metal was originally mined. So it's kind of like finding a fingerprint. Say, okay, this tin ingot is similar to the tin that we see in the ground in this place. And subsequent analysis of tin ingots found in Greece and Turkey also came from Devon and Cornwall. Turkey and Greece, also very far from Devon and Cornwall. There's no bronze without combining tin with copper. So Cornwall and Devon must have been essential to the Bronze Age. We talk about the Bronze Age is when people started using bronze, which was a little tougher than tin, but more malleable than iron. And that is when you're talking about Greeks and Romans, essential to them, especially the rise of the Greeks.
Sure. That's surprising, though, because I'm not going to pretend like I knew a ton about the origins of the Bronze Age or any other age, other than, you know, what I know cursorily through school. And then, you know, occasionally I'll play a video game that deals with some era, and I think I know something from that. But you knew it was more complicated, right? Like, it can't just be when everyone says, oh, that was during the Bronze Age. No one ever thinks about, well, what does that mean? Like, yeah, we were using bronze. We figured out a way to pound it into swords.
It was not the age when people were tanning.
Right. No. Well, maybe.
That's the Bronzer Age.
Bronzer Age,
which started in the late 60s.
Yeah, and we've all saw how that turned out.
You're right. And just, you know, there's probably a couple of historians in the audience shouting and a couple of people who may not know this, but everyone knew that a lot of tin came from Cornwall. Tin was mined in Cornwall until the last century. Mm-hmm. That's not the surprise. The surprise is, how did it make it to Israel? How did it make it to Turkey? We knew a lot of tin in, of course, the British Isles and Northern Europe came from Cornwall, but people were like, you know, they didn't really have good boats back then. 3,000 years ago, we're like, it's probably came from somewhere else. The tin in the Mediterranean probably didn't come from Cornwall. That's too far away. So this is a little bit mind blowing to be like, oh, I guess somebody had boats good enough to keep that tin coming all the way from Cornwall down to the Middle East, even 3,000 years ago.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's not quite the same as a FedEx freight plane today.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, they didn't really even have ocean-worthy vessels. They kind of had to hug the coast a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, that's pretty intense.
Like triremes in Civilization.
Yeah. It's almost like we understand the innovation that is the Iron Age and the use of iron. We have less understanding of the innovation of how the crap those guys got the commerce down there. You know what I mean? Like that's a bigger mystery than the actual ingots they were shipping. Like, how did they do that? That's pretty intense. Totally. People probably died, is what I'm saying. People died. I'll bet you. Lots of death.
Many Bothans died to bring you these tin ingots.
Wow. That's a lot of lizard men.
Hey, you know what? Probably we'll have a show involving lizard men. I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I bet it does because it has a huge back catalog. Is NBC Universal streaming service Peacock launching April 15th on Comcast's Xfinity Z1 and Flex video platforms.
Oh.
So if you're a Comcast subscriber to cable TV, you'll be able to get Peacock early. Everybody else gets it July 15th. There will be a free ad-supported version that doesn't have all the content. It has about half the content. So some of the originals, but not full seasons. Some of the back catalog, but not all of it. Current season NBC shows, but not the back catalog of those. If you want all the content, that's also free for Xfinity subscribers, but it's $5 a month if you're not a Comcast cable subscriber. And then you can pay to get rid of the ads. If you're a Comcast subscriber, it's $5 a month. If you're one of us, it's $10 a month. And the two tiers you can pay for, whether it's ads or not, will include live sports and early access to shows, things like the late night shows. You'll be able to watch The Tonight Show earlier in the evening.
Interesting. Do you, you said something on Twitter earlier and on Cord Killers, and I haven't heard this yet, but it seemed pretty bold. Like, maybe you guys think that's going to be a rad service and better than the mall or something. Do you want to explain that?
Yeah, I mean, the major reason is because NBC has a very impressive back catalog of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just start thinking about shows. No, it gets confusing because shows that aired on NBC, say Cheers, aren't NBC's. Cheers is part of CBS's catalog because CBS created the show.
Right.
But even stuff that NBC created, The Office, Parks and Rec, the list goes on. It's pretty impressive. Universal Studios, all of those movies, those are in there. And so you're going to have a really good catalog and you can try it out for nothing. So they're going to have a bunch of originals. They're going to have an original from Norman Lear, one from Mindy Kaling. They've got some nice looking originals there, but they're not even emphasizing the Peacock originals. They're just saying, check out our catalog. Look at the amazing stuff we get. We'll have live sports. We'll have Olympic stuff. And they're going to have NBC News as part of this. So there'll be a domestic NBC News channel. They're launching a brand new worldwide news service with Sky that Comcast also owns. So there'll be the NBC Sky News Worldwide News. There'll be live linear channels. You'll be able to jump into channels and just be like, I want to watch the SNL Greatest Skits channel. And you just turn it on without having to decide what to watch. And it'll just start playing stuff for you.
Wow.
And it's free. I think the biggest one for me is everybody's so tired of paying for subscriptions. Now you won't have to unless you find it worthwhile.
Right. I like that too. And I think there's something to that. Like the big winner of the next, I mean, the reason I think Disney Plus, part of the reason, not just content, and they've got decent content, but part of the reason that they did so well out of the gate was that it was a price point that seemed like a deal compared to everything else.
Right.
So you were like, oh, geez, this is only $7. Like, I was surprised when they announced the price for it. So for me, the next big winner will be a content-rich service, which it sounds like this will be, even at the free tier. But that will be compelling at free. You know, you'll be able to look at it like you would television in the old days. Like, well, I just pick that channel up and I just get it. And here's all the things I get. And if there's stuff I want that's more than this, I can get that, but I got
to
pay.
I can choose to pay for the extra stuff if I want.
Yeah. I think there's something to that for sure.
I'm very curious on their originals. If the free tier will be the rolling five, you know, like CW does on their app, which it's always the most recent five. So you kind of have to keep up. But if you miss a week or two, it's not a big deal. If you miss more than five, though, well, then you got to find some other solution, right?
Right.
I'm wondering if the free version of Peacock will be that, or if it'll just be samplers.
Yeah.
Where you can always start with the first couple, but if you want to go farther, you have to pay.
See, and I think that's okay, but not great. Like,
I don't know which one it'll be.
Yeah, well, that's true. This is too early for us to even say. But what I would really, what I hope for them, and as I hope for, you know, HBO Max and whatever Warner's doing with that and all that other stuff, is that some of these services just start to, this competition is good, and that they'll start to figure out creative ways to draw me over to their service other than, hey, this is all streaming and you can pay us money for it. And I don't know. It sounds like these guys are.
Yeah. Well, I think that's interesting, right? Because Disney Plus was like, we're worth $5. Mm-hmm. Come on. Look at all the stuff we have.
Yeah.
Peacock was like, yeah, but we know you're tired of paying things. So how about free?
Right.
HBO Max is saying, we're basically free because you pay $15 for HBO and we're not going to ask you for any more money for HBO Max.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you?
Sure.
Except unless you're not already paying for HBO. So they're all trying a different tactic. And I don't think it's a zero-sum game where only one of these will survive. But it will be interesting to see which ones do, because I don't think all of them can.
No, probably not. The one that I think will stick around no matter what, and it also, I mean, I don't know how much it depends on what new content they add, but, you know, Amazon's got this weird situation where it's all just there because you're paying for Prime, which is a whole nother animal, where it's an add-on.
It's essentially free if you have the shipping.
Right. Yeah. And that's different in compared to these others. So yeah, I can't believe how fascinating that whole space is getting. And also kind of how quickly we got here. I remember, 2007 was a long time ago now, and that's when I first dumped all cable subscriptions and stuff. But it's still impressive to me how quickly we've gotten to this place where the competition is heated up. I have so many options. I can choose to have all or none of them. Like,
well, that's the thing that I know subscription fatigue is real. But it's usually more pronounced amongst people who are also still paying for cable.
Right.
If you're no longer paying for cable, well, now you can choose when to drop stuff, when to pause stuff, mix and match. So you almost have a version of a la carte here.
Yeah.
So yes, it is annoying if you only have one show on a service. And you're like, I don't want to pay $10 for that, just for that one show. But then if you buy a season of a show, it's like $20, $30. So you have to do a little math sometimes, but you have way more control of what you're paying for than you ever have.
Yeah. And the services are becoming the channels in my weirdly, like that's the new thinking, or at least my thinking is, it's like, this isn't about, you know, where Friends is so much as it is, you know, HBO is my channel, or Netflix is a channel with a ton of programming and that's making it seem less like, you know, people that go, wow, we're just heading back to where it was in cable. It's the same thing now. We just got to pay all this money. I'm like, I don't know. There's some differences.
It's not.
Yeah, it's different.
It's still less than most people's average cable bill.
Right.
I know that you, listener, are like, no, I am vigilant about always calling and getting the best deal at the end of every contract, and so therefore I pay less than the average, and this is expensive. But you are not typical. Most people are paying $200-some on average.
Right. So
for their bill.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting. Time, Tom, what a time to be alive is what I'm saying. Isn't that crazy? It's crazy.
Man, I mean, I think I'm alive.
Well, you had me convinced.
I don't know how you prove it, though. Well, maybe scientists will do that. Let's get back to some scientists. A while ago, not that long ago, just finding evidence of gravitational waves was huge news. It was controversial news. Did they really find it? It was incredible. Now, the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, aka LIGO, or LIGO, and the Virgo detectors have both recorded not only gravitational waves, they do that all the time. That's like eating breakfast for them. But they recorded an unknown or unanticipated burst of gravitational waves on January 14th. Usually, gravitational waves are pretty steady. And they're usually tied into events that are very obvious, like, oh, there's two black holes colliding out there, so we're getting gravitational waves. Or there's some neutron stars merging in that direction. That's why we're seeing these gravitational waves. But a burst, where you just get a gravitational waves and then gone, that's new.
Mm-hmm.
The burst seems to have come from the direction of Betelgeuse, which coincidentally has shown some signs that it might be near exploding. So people were wondering, did it explode? Is this an early detector? However, Betelgeuse appears to be safe for now, since the burst was outside of Betelgeuse's locale. It's in the direction, but it's not really in the Betelgeuse locale. And there's the chance that this burst ends up just being an error in detection. There's a once in 25.8 year possibility of that happening.
Wow. I always thought we were done exploring, or we were done getting new, exciting, possible discoveries like this. We're probably just getting started, right? Like,
yeah.
In my head, it's like, oh, we got radio waves from some planet. That'll never happen again. Or, you know, there's a big one down on the notch. Just mark that off. We're done. But no, I think we're just getting started. This is very exciting. I love this kind of stuff. More gravity.
And we don't, and yeah, maybe it's an error.
It might be.
That's a pretty low chance that it's an error.
Yeah.
And so if it isn't, what causes that?
Yeah, what was causes an error?
Two very large gravitationally propelled spaceships colliding?
Could be.
That's as likely as anything else we know of right at the moment. I'm sure we'll figure out some other natural phenomena behind it. But right now it's all questions, and that's fun.
Somebody's giant Star Destroyer Space Force ships have collided. That's what it is.
There's a couple of space forces. This is the danger of space force.
I knew it. Right, I knew it was coming. All right. Yeah. Well done there. Quick thanks to everybody who helped support us by submitting articles to us. They do this over at our Reddit page, currentgeek.reddit.com. Tom, we should probably give some credit to those who did this week.
Yeah. These people don't submit articles like AN or they submit full written text that we talk about on the show. And thank you to Jeff Rose, PC Rum, PC999, and Tipo De Cinta, who all submitted stories that we used on the show today. You can go vote on the stories that make the show. Let us know you're interested in them, and even submit your own like these fine people did at currentgeek.reddit.com.
Oh, well, you know what that sound means? It means suddenly Limp Bizkit is relevant again. No, that's not it. We have a segment called Keep On Rolling, where Tom Reed's got a quote from French literary critic Roland Barthes' seminal work. And you're going to do this now. I'm excited about this one because I also believe that language is a skin. But go ahead. Tell me what it says.
So you have that line memorized. Yeah. Because I took out the word seminal work mythologies this week because I'm moving on to some other Roland Barthes quotes.
Ooh, hold on now. Is everyone ready for this? Strap in, rather.
Mythologies was his, like... most accessible work, most cited work. I don't know how to put it. Popular, maybe. I'm sure however I'm putting it would offend Roland Barthes. But sure. He wrote more than just mythology. So this quote from French literary critic Roland Barthes goes like this. Language is a skin. I rub my language against the other. It is as if I had words instead of fingers, or fingers at the tips of my words. My language just trembles with desire.
Oh, wow. All right. It's not a different kind of work there. Okay. So I'll tell you what I came into with this idea that language is a skin. It is the human's best way outside of initial impressions, just seeing somebody's face, seeing their expression, you know, the pattern recognition stuff we're good at. But it seems like the number two, if not number one way to kind of get your bearings with a new person is the minute they start saying stuff. So language is literally your skin. What you say is what I'm going to see. I'm going to see you as the thing you are saying, that you're, you know, the kind of person you talk like will be the kind of person I see, AKA your skin. I don't know if that's what he's saying here at all, but that's what I thought.
I think you're pretty close. I think you're pretty close. Because you know, I'm not going to claim that I fully understand what he's saying exactly either. I think you need a PhD for that, but I like that. I like that. The idea that language is just another way of sensing and communicating the way your fingers are.
Yeah, see? Exactly.
In fact, some people even speak with their fingers, you know, with ASL or some other sign language.
Sure. That's another way of looking at it. All right. Well, I like this. We have moved beyond his seminal work, and now we're moving on to his sexy work, My Language Trembles with Desire.
I mean, yeah. It is kind of, I mean, My Language Trembles with Desire. What are you trying to say there, Roland?
It's his Songs of Solomon and his biblical work here. All right. Well, we'll find out more in subsequent weeks. I always enjoy that. Hey, guys. Going to talk to you about Netgear for a second. Is your Wi-Fi feeling old? Does it buffer while streaming? Does connecting new devices slow it down? Can it handle gaming, video calls, large file transfers? And what happens when you try to do it all at once? Well, doesn't matter how fast your internet connection is. If your Wi-Fi router is old and outdated, with Orbi Wi-Fi 6 from Netgear, your Wi-Fi will feel new again. Wi-Fi 6 is the latest tech and allows more devices to connect and stream simultaneously without impacting speed or reliability. The result delivers the fastest Wi-Fi for all your devices anywhere in your home. Stream in HD, 4K, or even 8K without buffering. Eliminate lag while gaming and connect more devices to your Wi-Fi than ever before. Orbi Wi-Fi 6 is like upgrading your Wi-Fi to first class. If you're ready for the best Wi-Fi ever, you can get it today from Netgear and never worry about your Wi-Fi again. Check out Orbi Wi-Fi 6 at your local Best Buy or at netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. That's netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. And we thank Netgear for their support.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
All right. Forecast used to be a show we used to do, and then we converted it into a segment for this show. And it's a way for us to predict the future in all kinds of ways, whether it's about technology, politics, social upheaval, changes in science, whatever. We it's all on the table. And today I threw one together based on nothing. Just kind of was in my head. Here's what I think. We always talk about how, you know, good wireless technology, one of the aspects of it is not just, you know, how much data you can send and receive, how quick it is, but how far away you can be from the source. And there are technologies floating around throughout the years that have tried to make that better with both wireless devices and wireless technologies in general. Wi-Fi or WiMAX, which is that even a thing still? Is WiMAX a deal or did that die?
You know, they still use it in Japan and a few other places.
Okay. So that was for a while that was being talked about. Google's supposedly working on something that made them pause their rollout of fiber and stuff like that. I feel like we haven't heard a lot on that in a while. So anyway, for whatever reason, those things seem a little bit stalled. I do believe we are heading toward a point in technology, wireless technology, and not too a distant future where your home or apartment will be your hotspot. You will have a service that will be based there. And you'll be able to go up to 1,000, just use this number because it's arbitrary, but 1,000 miles away from that point and still have access to it. It'll be your internet, no matter how far you go within that range or whatever the range will be. And that may start at 100 miles and then go to 200 and 300 and it'll grow. And eventually we'll just have, you know, some spec that's just letting us go as far, you know, practically as far as we need to go in any given time. And the only time you wouldn't have access to it is if you, you know, went to Europe or something and then you're like, well, I still need access to my point. And in that case, though, that technology will also feature some sort of hopping, basically roaming mechanism so that you could hop between, you know, other places and they would act as like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Points of amplification for your signal at home. That's the way I meant to say it. So what do you think, Tom? Am I up in the night here? Do you think that's a crazy idea? Or do you think one day or we're just going to be able to tether ourselves no matter where we are, no matter how far we go?
So you're saying I could take my device outside of my home up to 1,000 miles away and still be able to access my data?
Yes.
Like on my phone.
Now I realize what you're going to say. Here's what
you're
I'm saying.
You're inventing cellular networks here.
I should make this more clear because this is an important distinction you're making, and I don't blame you for making it. My thinking is that you would no longer have to deal with multiple service providers. So there wouldn't be a home ISP and there wouldn't be a phone ISP. And in a lot of cases, that is the same. Some people are getting AT&T wireless and they're getting AT&T, you know, DSL or something.
Or with 5G, just not being snide here anymore, with 5G, the plans are they will provide you your home service through 5G. And then that would also be your service outside the home.
Exactly. The big difference here would be you're not jumping around through hotspots. You're not hoping this coffee shop in a rural town has good Wi-Fi. You are still connected to that data no matter how far you go, and you have full control over it, its quality, its availability. It's not a different provider. It's one provider serves all for you. And then you just go out there anywhere you want to go.
I guess my only real question is, why would it need to be from your home? That seems like a waste of bandwidth.
Because
really, I mean, yes, on the one hand, it's like, oh, it's like a VPN. So I can see that attractiveness of like, but if I'm only connecting to me and only I can connect to it, then I can access my own network resources. But how many people really care about that?
Well, and that's a great question.
So many people are putting their stuff in the cloud already,
right?
Especially everyday users that, you know, they're not running a NAS on their home network. So in that case, if you could broadcast over 1,000 miles, why wouldn't the mobile carrier just do that and say, you know, now I can share this out to people and get amazing coverage?
You're making a very valid point. I think that's probably all true. And the funny thing is, effectively, this is kind of what we're getting anyway, right? Like what I'm describing, we're sort of getting.
Well, the one thing about this that I think is interesting and is not necessarily impossible, but definitely something we don't have right now is the range.
Right.
We don't have the ability to broadcast connectivity wirelessly over long distances. We need lots of telephone masts.
Right.
We need, and with 5G, you even need internal mass because 5G doesn't penetrate walls very well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be an issue for a while until people crack that code.
Right.
And LTE will be your fallback. That'll be, you know, the thing is like, oh, I'm inside. I can only get LTE. That's going to be a thing for a while.
Sure. I don't know. There's something about.
But if you could now broadcast coverage with one phone mast over 1,000 mile range, even if it's diameter, not even radius.
Yeah.
That's a big breakthrough in coverage.
Right. Just in coverage technology. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. And everybody having that in your own home maybe doesn't make as much sense as just that being available generally from whoever your provider is. I just like this idea. You know what it is? It's this fallout from this freaking YouTube mess. I just want more decentralization and more direct control.
And that's in services. That's not in connectivity.
Right.
Because the YouTube mess Scott's talking about, if you didn't hear, is his channel got pulled down for a while because someone made a spurious copyright claim.
Yeah. Well, three of them in a row, and it got me kicked out. And so, and then I had to fight with robots to get it back, which is his own story.
Back.
Yeah, it is back.
But
now.
It's sort of the downside of like centralized control is like if the centralized control isn't paying attention to you, it can be bad.
Yeah.
So decentralized stuff doesn't need a connectivity issue though. That just needs blockchain, decentralized services.
Sure. And what it sounds like I'm doing is saying, well, let's centralize it, but for me. You know what I mean? Like, let's make my own centralized thing with this connection idea. I think that's probably wrongheaded, but I think it's coming just from this.
The idea that I could still get my Wi-Fi, you know, 1,000 miles away, it's pretty attractive.
It's a cool idea, right? This is all I'm asking
for.
Forget
the practicalities and the realities of business models or whatever.
Yeah.
Like Eileen has a problem where Waze is like not sure it's still connected to Wi-Fi in our driveway.
Oh, geez.
For me, it doesn't seem to be a problem. I'm not sure what the deal is, but But for her, when she gets in the car, she always has to drive down the block partway to get away from our Wi-Fi before she puts in the address.
Oh, weird. That's weird. You should do that too then, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't know why.
You're on the same ISP, same phones, I think, ish.
Well, and it's not the ISP, it's the Wi-Fi, right?
Oh,
and
right.
I'm on an older phone, so theoretically hers should be better because she's got an iPhone 11.
Oh, she's got an 11. You have the 10, the original 10.
I have 10. A 10,
Like
not even a 10S, just a 10.
10, man, look at you, old school 10 in it.
Or my Pixel 4 ain't bad, but neither one of them have problems.
Yeah, well, you're just blessed, that's all. But here's what I would say to finish this out. I would just say that I think you're probably right, but there is something about that range being very attractive. And I don't know what it is, how to harness it, what the best use case is, but the idea
there's something to it. You're right.
Just go anywhere and have that Wi-Fi connection. You're not using your mobile ISP all the time because you're using that home one. And if it was that strong, it could reach that far. There's something about that. That's why my WiMAX and things like that, you know, are so attractive sounding.
Well, WiMAX was just a mobile technology. It was like LTE. Mm. But because it was called WiMAX, it kind of sounded like Wi-Fi.
Yeah, good point. And then 5G is really just a mobile technology that they can... We're now talking about enough pipe to for most people. Yeah. That's going to be great.
It's a protocol that allows for higher speeds that can be used at different wavelengths.
Yeah. So we'll see when that all happens for real and whether or not it's closer to my thinking. But there's your forecast. Hey, if you guys have your own out there and you want to send them in, currentgeek@gmail.com, we'd love to hear what you think might be the thing we should do. Okay. Now this. I don't have any other sound yet. I got to come up with a new sound for this. It's time for the best thing of all time this week. Yeah, that's right. Stuff we think is so cool that it's the greatest thing of all time, at least this week. And I'll start for me this week. It is. thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. Tip your waiter. All right. For me, it's Littlewood. And you're like, what the frick is that, Scott? And I would say it is a brand new indie developed video game currently on Steam and early access, coming to Switch soon, published by a single creator. Dude made a game called Littlewood, and he is obviously inspired by the likes of Stardew Valley, which is a recent indie hit from a couple of years ago, still very strong now. Things like Animal Crossing, a big Nintendo game. Also, if anyone out there knows what Harvest Moon is, games like that. Sort of, you know, imagine a game where your little guy runs around and creates farms, builds additions to his place, meets people in the town, expands the town, makes relationships and friends that give him more abilities.
On Steam, you said?
This is on Steam. It's currently like $13 is all. It's on sort of an introductory 25% off sale thing going on. And it was number one in the charts the other day, and I just thought, what the heck is this? And then I looked at the reviews, and it was currently at that point at overwhelmingly positive levels, which never happens on Steam unless the game's pretty special. So I thought, well, I like those kinds of games. Why don't I check this out? Having been disappointed before by others who claim to be the same. So I just thought, all right, I'll give it a shot. $13, not too bad. Let's give it a shot. This is digital freaking crack. It is extremely addicting. It's very good and is one of those. And if people are listening and they know what I'm talking about, you know if you know what I'm talking about, that kind of game, you be ready because this thing is going to eat your life away. Even if you just look at it as a quick $13 tide you over until Animal Crossing comes out on the Switch, it is a delightful, wonderful little game. Deceptively complex too, and just simple to get into and so much fun, and I just cannot stop playing this thing. So highly recommend it. My favorite thing of this week of all time is Littlewood. You don't have to name your town that. You can name it anything. It could be Tom Merritt's Haberdashery if you want, or whatever. It doesn't matter. You can call it whatever. And your guy can be...
I like the sound of that.
You can name your guy something real stupid if you want. But anyway...
My guy's name is real stupid.
Very nice. I'll be thinking of just how stupid my name is later when I'm pulling up the corn and the beets that I planted about an hour and a half ago. All right. Tom Merritt, how about you this week?
I want to talk gardening.
Okay.
Put in a little succulents garden this past weekend. Past couple of weekends, actually. It took me 2 weekends to finish it off. And with succulents, they grow nicely in part sun, part shade. You may think like, oh, succulents, desert stuff. Yeah, they're actually kind of from rainforesty areas. But they're pretty hardy. And so you don't have to water them a lot. and they can survive in, you know, as long as it's warm. They don't do well in cold weather, but anything above, you know, 50, 60 degrees, they do great. So you don't have to do a lot of maintenance on them, and they do great. But you do need to plant them in a mix of sand, coarse sand.
Okay.
And away from clay. And, it, you know, once you've done that, you kind of want to make sure that you're not encouraging grass and stuff to grow around them, or it just doesn't look very nice. So long and the short of that is I needed a bunch of bags of sand, yeah. Some pea gravel, which is like small round gravel that looks nice, to put over the top once I had everything planted, and some Mexican river pebbles, which are those big flat kind of grayish black stones to make a border for the garden.
Okay.
I was not looking forward to hauling all of that in my Prius.
Oh, that's such a pain. Plus you get dirt everywhere in the Prius, and yeah, that's bad.
So I went around to the True Value, went to Home Depot, looked around, was figuring out what I needed to get. And then I found out that Home Depot, at least in my area, does same day deliveries for $8.99.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh, man with large truck will bring me the heavy bags of sand and leave them on the porch next to where I want to put in succulent garden. I'm in.
Yeah, it's cheap.
This is the kind of thing. I was even looking at Amazon. Like, can you buy some of this stuff from Amazon? And you sort of can, but it's usually not the size I want. It's like, it's weird to just buy it from Amazon. So I was like, oh, I know exactly where it's coming from. And Home Depot, if you haven't checked it lately, has moved into the modern world. They have a very easy to use website to find the stuff you want. I was able to set up the express delivery easily. I paid with PayPal on homedepot.com. Can't do that on Amazon. Well, maybe you can, but I never do. Anyway, I was, and once it was delivered, like they gave me a range, like it'll be delivered sometime between these hours today. Once it was on its way, they sent me a link to a map where I could see the truck coming and knew when it was going to show up. Mm-hmm. So I was like, man, Amazon is not the be all end all of shopping. Granted, Home Depot is still like a big, big box company. It's not your mom and pop store or anything, but I was like, this is great. And I definitely will be doing more of this kind of stuff around the house, and I will be taking advantage of that. I know $8.99 ain't nothing, but for my pain and agony, the wear and tear on the car, all of that, I definitely am going to take advantage of that.
I would actually call that cheap. Like
felt a little bit cheap compared to like what you'd pay for shipping.
Yeah. I feel like I paid.
It's the heavy stuff too.
Yeah, that's not, and it's dirty and it's big and it leaks and bags rip and, you know, there's a million things about that. We do it every year for mulch and stuff like that around here. And if I knew it was, I mean, now I'm going to know. And we live really close to a Home Depot. We may just do this for our mulch trip this next time. That's a great idea.
Just to make it easy on yourself.
Yeah, they should do, make it part of DoorDash. There you go. Just have it be part of the gig economy.
I'd like a Chick-fil-A sandwich and mulch.
Yeah, and some mulch, please. Ooh, bad combo. But yeah, you don't want a combo is what I'm saying. Anyway, no, that's great. Well done, Home Depot, and hopefully more of that, please. Also, that price is...
I'm not even a big fan of Home Depot, but I was like, I'm definitely doing this.
That price is super reasonable. I don't know. Yeah. You could have said it was 25 and I would have believed you. Right? That sounds more realistic to me, but maybe they're introductory on this thing. I don't know. All right. Well, that's all well and good, but what is also well and good is when you guys, yeah, that's right, you guys listening, send us in your questions. We got one from Matt. This came via email, currentgeek@gmail.com. You can also leave us voicemails at 801-471-0462 if you'd rather do that. Matt says this, as you talked about Apocalypse Now, it sounds funny out of context, Apocalypse Now then... Whatever.
The movie.
Yeah, the movie. I was thinking about the Quest series in STV that followed the same storyline. This far in, it'd be a pain to go back, and I'm wondering now if any of the movies you've watched did have a reference somewhere in World of Warcraft. I bet a lot of them do. Thanks for the great shows. Film Sack and Current Geek are my two favorite must-listen podcasts of the week, Matt.
Definitely Godfather references in WoW. I remember that. Oh, yeah,
for sure.
We will be watching Lord of the Rings movie, part of the Film Fest, so when we get there, that'll work.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I'll bet you money, anything. Okay, so this has been my experience with WoW. There's so much content in there that if there's a thing to be a fan of, they'll find a way to sneak it into the game. They just do.
There's got to be a Rosebud.
Oh, yeah. Somewhere. Yeah.
Right?
Guaranteed. Don't know where, but it's there. 100%
sure. Any of that quotable stuff that we talk about probably worked its way into quest text at some point.
I mean, freaking Paris Hilton's in the game. And I don't even know if anyone's a huge fan of Paris Hilton's work over there. I don't know, but she's in there.
Don't even remember who she is anymore.
I know. His name, that name in the game is Harris Pilton, but it's clear what they're doing. And he does like fashion, sells fashion accessories or something. So again, read it that what you want, but they always are making these references. The Mario Brothers are referenced in lots of places. There's all sorts of stuff. So yeah, I can't off the top of my head, it's hard for me to think of any that we've done here that then show up there, but I'm sure they're there. Pretty much guaranteed.
Love it.
Good stuff. Thanks for the email. We love getting those again. currentgeek@gmail.com. Next week, it's an autopilot edition. Ooh.
Oh, sit right back and we'll tell you a tale of a fateful trip, Scott. Whoa.
Now, this is important. We'll be doing the version of this that had the professor, we had, and the rest. It didn't have the professor and Marianne and the theme song yet, so be ready for that little reference.
Black and white.
Yeah, yeah. Gilligan's Island, man. We're making
what
it
other
happen.
Strange pilot things are there in the pilot episode of Gilligan's Island? We'll be talking about that as well as our memories of the show in general.
Yeah,
I can't wait.
I am excited about this one for unknown reasons. It's just kind of a dumb show that I loved as a kid, but I think there's a lot
it's
to say about it.
It's such a huge part of our culture growing up. I'm not sure if it's still as relevant these days for kids. I really don't know. You maybe have a better handle on this. Do your kids know and reference Gilligan's Island? Do kids these days do that?
I would say that they would if availability was better. Like, it's so hard to find it as a, you know, you just can't log into Netflix and find it. So they're huge fans of the Beverly Hillbillies or the Dick Van Dyke Show, which we've done on the show, or a lot of that old stuff totally resonates with them. And I'll bet this would too, and just be silly good fun, but it's not easy to find. And I think that's a weird thing. We'll talk some about that as well. Why is Gilligan's Island not, you know, why isn't it just like everything else? It seems like just somewhere on some streaming service. Why doesn't Hulu have all the back episodes? I don't know. But we'll talk some about that and more, and why Gilligan's Island was a big deal for a kid growing up in the 70s and 80s, and how it'll probably never get made again. It's kind of show of its time. I don't think they ever make a Gilligan's Island ever again, unless it's a raunchy R comedy version of a movie, and maybe that'll happen.
Yeah,
probably. Weirder things have happened. Anyway, that's next week, right here at Current Geek, Autopilot Edition. We're doing Gilligan's Island. I think it's going to do it. Tom, any cool things happening in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, I finally got the release date for Trigger, the sequel to Pilot X. Trigger, it tells the tale of what happened to Pilot X after he saved the universe in the book Pilot X. That's coming out March 24th.
Oh, that's soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can buy it, you can pre-order it right now at inkshares.com, look for Trigger. And there is an Amazon listing, but I'm not sure it's the official one. So hold off till you see the official like cover art and everything show up in Amazon. But that's coming soon. And if you want to keep up with all of my writing, I've got a Patreon for it. It's my crazy, silly Twitter nickname, Ace Detect. Patreon.com/ACEDTECT. Knowing that you really must have wanted to support me if you're willing to figure that out.
Dang straight. Well, that sounds fantastic. People should go check that out. Once again, to support us, go to patreon.com/currentgeek. You can also go to currentgeek.com for everything else. Looking for old shows, links to the video versions, all that stuff that we used to do, you can check that out. You can also email us, currentgeek@gmail.com. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, for all of you. We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
We'll have Ocean Force. That, oh, wait, we have that. It's the Navy.
All right, that's the Navy. Yeah, we don't need that.